Live from Chicago, this is Dan Proft, substituting for Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, we're featuring commentary by Chicago Tribune columnist John Cass, University of Chicago professor Charles Lipson, and senior editor of In These Times, Salim Muakil. Our program coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in beautiful downtown Chicago, where our toll-free phone lines are now open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. Our website is beyondthebeltway.com. Again, I'm Dan Proft. You can catch my act normally on AM 560 in Chicago, where I host a morning drive show, Chicago's Morning Answer, 5 to 9 a.m., Monday through Friday. Gentlemen, thanks so much for joining our panel this evening, and let's get right to it. Donald Trump's cabinet is taking shape with all due speed, particularly in the national security side where he's starting. He has leveled up retired Lieutenant General Michael Flynn to be his national security advisor. He has leveled up Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions to be his attorney general. There is talk of Marine Corps General James Mattis, or possibly even former Virginia Senator Jim Webb to be Secretary of Defense, Mitt Romney to be Secretary of State. So just quickly, I'd like to get everybody's kind of first blush on how they think Trump's cabinet is shaping up, both in terms of who has formally been elevated as well as who's rumored to be part of his cabinet. And Salim, why don't we start with you?
I'm a bit terrified, you know.
Can you be a bit terrified
at these choices? You know, I see Jeff Sessions as a disaster. I see Mitt Romney as an indication of Trump's incoherence. I mean, Romney is very anti-Russian. He had singled out the Russians as perhaps the greatest enemy of the U.S. And Trump seems to be pretty much a fan of Putin and Russia, or at least he's not as opposed as Romney is. And these other choices, Flynn has exhibited some Islamophobic tendencies, and a certain kind of anger, inappropriate anger at being expressed at the wrong time. So I'm not at all reassured.
Can we fill in? There's a lot of blanks to be filled in there. But why don't we start with? Let's start with Lieutenant General Flynn. Thomas Friedman, I Meet the Press today. No conservative, Thomas Friedman, New York Times, said of Lieutenant General Michael Flynn that he did an incredible job decimating ISIS in Iraq, that they used big data to target ISIS leaders and then to connect the dots to other ISIS terrorists and really decimate them in Iraq, and that he is eminently qualified to be national security advisor. So is Thomas Friedman got it wrong? Is he not seeing Michael Flynn's Islamophobia, or what's the evidence to suggest that Lieutenant General Flynn would be an inappropriate national security advisor?
Well, some of his statements. I mean, as a high-level cabinet appointee or as a high-level cabinet official, he would have to be a lot more reasonable in the way he expresses himself. He would have to be less declarative in his opposition to an entire religion. I mean, he's in many ways demonized Islam.
Well, I think he's talked about political Islam as distinguished from the religion. Islam as a governance system versus Islam as a religion.
I think he didn't make that distinction.
Had he
made that distinction, it'd be a lot more palatable.
Charles Lipson, University of Chicago professor, just started a blog, zipdialogue.com. I want to get that in. Also a contributor to realclearpolitics.com. You're from Marks, Mississippi. Jeff Sessions next door in Alabama. Allegations of essentially incidents of racist conduct or language in Jeff Sessions' past. How do you assess his nomination for attorney general?
I can see why people are concerned about his statements in the past, even if they came a long time ago. His counter is that he did a lot of prosecutions, including prosecutions of Klan leaders, did desegregation and so forth. I think there will be substantial changes in the way that the Office of Civil Rights is conducted in the Justice Department, and it's been a controversial area for many years, in part because some people in the Office of Civil Rights didn't think that there could be violation conduct by prejudice by blacks against whites, and others had said that that's not true. I think the big issue is going to be on immigration, they're going to move in a very hard way. My own specialty is international politics, and I think that what you have is a under Trump is a very tough but not neoconservative group. These are people who believe that you could use military force, but they have zero intention of long-term on-the-ground engagements. The question then will be, how effectively can you use big data and air campaigns and ancillary help to local militias and the like to get some better outcomes? So I think that, and I think that the criticism that you may get of Flynn is, in addition to the points about Islam, is whether or not, who's going to be the strategic thinker in this group. Pompeo's a really smart, big-thinking guy. He's going to head CIA.
Kansas congressman, right?
Right. You've got Mathis, if he is appointed, and they'll have to change a law to appoint him to head the Pentagon, has extremely high regard in the military and is a big thinker. But we just don't know who will set the main policy in these areas.
John Cass, Chicago Tribune, page 2 columnist, longtime Chicago Tribune, page 2 columnist. Your assessment of some of these choices, the criticism that these are loyalists and Trump is not thinking outside of the proverbial box.
But even
David Brooks, just kind of an incredible statement, you know, His Eminence, David Brooks, Obama's favorite Republican, even he had to say just because they were Trump supporters doesn't necessarily mean they're unqualified. They actually have impressive resumes. What a concession from Brooks.
The same David Brooks who said, sort of a conservative hat tip to Trump's voters, that they would vote their gene pool.
Gene pool, yes.
That's the same one, right? Okay, so what we have here is a...
Lord.
Amazing, right? What we have here is an effort by the left to reform itself after a devastating loss. And they have to, and they're fighting over how to demonize certain aspects of Trump's choices. I don't see Romney as that terrifying. Romney is sort of the establishment choice, right?
But is he really, is it likely that Romney's a part of this administration?
I would doubt it.
Right.
Right?
That's a kind of a show, isn't
it? I would doubt it. It's a show.
Night
it's like
Live
a.
I got that right last night.
Yeah. Well, it's a nod. Into an insight.
It's a nod. You know, and we don't. I don't really know how this whole thing will shake out. I mean, what's the line? People who talk about transition don't know, and those who know don't say it. Don't say anything.
Well, we're going to pick this up on the other side. We're also going to take your calls. Again, that phone number, 1-800-723-8289. Dan Proft in for Bruce Dumont on this edition of Beyond the Beltway.
You know.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
Thank you all very much, Admiral Kelly, Captain Card, officers and sailors of the USS Abraham Lincoln, my fellow Americans. Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
If Dan Prof, thanks for joining us and our august panel on this edition of Beyond the Beltway. I'm in for Bruce Dumont. With me is Chicago Tribune columnist John Cass, University of Chicago professor Charles Lipson, and WVON radio talk show host and In These Times senior editor Salim Muakil. We're talking about the Trump cabinet edit as it is shaping up. And we left before the break talking about whether Mitt Romney will have a place in it. It seems to me that a lot of what you've seen in the last several days of Trump meetings, very highly publicized Trump meetings, is Trump smartly trying to project himself as above the fray of past name-calling and never-Trumpers.
But, you know, if he were serious about that, he would put his Twitter thumbs away. Okay.
Well,
because on one hand,
he has to rally to the defense of his vice president when he goes to the theater.
Right.
Yes. Okay. Is Trump not doing that? Bringing in Romney?
Yes, of course he is.
Okay.
Of course, isn't that what they do? Isn't that part of
what he should do?
What he should do, mm-hmm. Right? If he had only, taken people that were supporting him early on, everyone would scream. Now he's offering an olive branch, and then now they're screaming.
Besides
again.
The show, they're. Let's assume that he's not offering Mitt Romney something. This is a guy who actually knows a lot of people and knows competent people, and
yes.
You could talk with him about it. And I think that when you've been running against all of these people all the time, I think that first you're showing magnanimity, and secondly, you're giving them an opportunity to kiss the ring.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, there's no question that that's a part of it. I'm sure that's a part of it with Donald Trump. But nonetheless, it makes sense that what he is kind of projecting optically, right, and kind of getting beyond. And it's consistent with that. What about the idea? I know Mattis, General Mattis, who would be an eminently qualified, informed
big,
choice for
a
Secretary
of Defense. Big favorite, I mean, among the military.
He's
huge
a,
favorite.
He's,
but Webb, too.
He's an icon.
Yeah,
right.
He's an
so
icon.
What what about that idea? You know, this is something Democrat presidents have done before, reached across the aisle to a Republican to make them SecDef. What about the idea of former Democrat candidate for president and Virginia Senator Jim Webb, a decorated Vietnam veteran, for Secretary of Defense? Does anybody like that?
I think it would be good.
Why not?
Why not?
I just don't know. I think that there are two jobs at defense. One is to guide broad policy, and the other is to manage the biggest bureaucracy in world history. And it's just a massive bureaucratic job managing this. And I think in particular, we have some major problems in terms of acquisitions and other things. So I would have to look very carefully at the managerial skills. I also want to say this about Trump. I thought that Bush, when he began, George W. Bush, when he began with very strong appointments, Cheney as a vice president who was going to bring him nothing electorally but was going to be for governance, Rumsfeld and Powell, he was surrounding himself with strong people, but he didn't fire them. He didn't fire Rumsfeld when there was a huge blow-up in Iraq and it didn't go. What I saw with the firing of Christie, when they saw that lobbyists were coming in and so forth, and the fact that they haven't immediately just given Giuliani the job he wants, is that Trump is paying very careful attention to the people he's making these appointments to, and he is willing to cut his losses if he sees a problem, and he's not going to let it delay.
What about the triumvirate in the Oval Office? It seems to me he's taken – let's move away from the cabinet and let's talk about the inner sanctum for a moment. It seems to me he's taken the Reagan approach. Reagan had the three-headed advisory council of Deaver, Meese, and Baker. Trump has – I would say less talented, but it's interesting he's taking this approach. Kellyanne Conway is campaign manager for messaging. Reince Priebus to run the day-to-day, to have access to Capitol Hill and the establishment, comfort level there as his chief of staff. And then Steve Bannon as sort of his alter ego. What's the assessment of that three-headed counselor? Because one of the three, in particular, like Sessions, is being demonized by the left. As you were saying, John, about trying to figure out who they can demonize to subvert the Trump administration, the left.
The demonization is not only about delegitimizing the Trump campaign. It's also about organizing the left, right? It's about organizing the left against the Democrats right? That's how I see it. But in
the, it's the Democrats.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Say more.
I think that. Well, I don't want to get ahead of our.
No, go ahead.
Thing, but they're trying. They want to say, the left wants to say, we're here, right? We were lied to or rigged out of it the last time, and we're here now. And all this stuff about the safety pins and whatever are emotional or symbolic devices.
So he's the lightning rod this time. Bannon is serving as the lightning rod.
It's part of helping the left organize against the Democrats.
Don't you think he deserves some of that demonization?
Well, I mean,
I don't know any more than Jones deserved it or Jeremiah Wright deserved it.
Well, he's bringing in an entire coterie of these what people have begun calling the alt-right into the White House. He's
people
ushering them in.
That,
well, first of all, who's the coterie? And secondly, I mean, of Steve Bannon, you know, again, a man of the left, Alan Dershowitz, said of the charges against Steve Bannon.
I wouldn't quite call Alan Dershowitz a man of the left.
Well, okay, he calls himself a man of the left. So I'll give people the benefit of the doubt to call themselves what they want. He's a Democrat. He's not a fan of Steve Bannon. He doesn't like Steve Bannon. He doesn't like Breitbart. He doesn't like Steve Bannon's politics. And he said, look.
Well, it's hard for a Jewish man who's conscious about his religion to like someone like Steve Bannon who shepherds this Breitbart.
And yet Alan Dershowitz said, I've examined the case against Steve Bannon in terms of this charge of anti-Semitism, and I don't see the evidence. That's what Dershowitz said.
I'm not surprised at
this. So I think that the issue of these three-headed approaches is that everybody is very jealous of their turf. There's no clear boundaries of the turf. And the question is, will one head try to bite the others?
Of course.
How do you get them to work, to play nice together in the sandbox?
Of course they'll bite, right?
Right.
They all, history tells us this, no matter what party, they're always going to fight over it. The point is, if you're a wise president, you know, you will allow that to happen to achieve your aims, whatever they are, whether it's elevating Bannon or knocking him down, letting Kellyanne Conway.
And isn't that what happened in the Obama administration with Axelrod, Jared, and Rahm?
I think that that's right. But I think that when we look back on the Obama years, I think that we're going to see that there was a crucial moment that came in the midterm. And in Bill Clinton's case, he moved to the center after after the contract with America and Gingrich's win, and he moved toward triangulation. Obama made a very deliberate decision that he would not do that. And because he didn't, I think his presidency took a fundamental choice at that point. So I think what the issues will be with regard to Trump when he faces setbacks, how he handles those, and how he manages conflict within the office.
But again, a lot of that is the context. With Clinton, he had come in after 12 years of Republican rule, and he was trying to make the Democrats, make them players again on the national scene. So he had to take a lot of these Republican light positions. You know?
Let's get a couple calls in. Let's go to Sid in Knoxville on WNOX. Hi, Sid.
Hey, sir.
Go ahead, Sid.
Yes, the reason I called in is regarding this whole thing of Trump's cabinet. I keep thinking back of his celebrity show where basically you have guests are fired, or these other shows where also they bring them back in to create a drama. I believe this whole thing with Romney or Christie or these other names are literally him just playing with the media. He has no real intention to bring them back. It's just to create a buzz. I believe Donald Trump is actually the true Don of Don. If you think about The Godfather and Kiss in the Ring, it's just a classic illustration of him wanting to basically have people kowtow to him. He still has his agenda, and the cabinet members that have actually been chosen is a testimony to the agenda that he plans to carry out for the people.
Okay, thanks for the call, Sid. I mean, the whole thing of Trump is bringing in loyalists. What president or executive doesn't bring in loyalists? I mean, it's an odd criticism to me.
Well, I think that's right, although it is also the case that the most famous counter example is Lincoln and bringing in Seward and others. So I think that we can overly concentrate on these appointments. That is, this This is Trump. This is Trump's administration, just as the last one was President Obama's administration. And the main thing that you want to look at about these appointments is what they say about Trump.
Wait a minute, though. I mean, yes, they will tell us what about Trump, but I don't want to move off on this criticism of the transition before we understand that. I don't think we in our business, the media business, make it clear to the people that it's not just Democrats on the far left with their safety pins freaking out over what Trump's going to do.
Right.
This is the establishment Republican class that he went to war with, that he's given them Rance Priebus as chief of staff. But they're all, you mentioned earlier, you referenced the neocons, right, that went over to Hillary, you know, at the beginning.
Right, right.
Are they coming back? Well, they want to come back now.
Well, so John Bolton, he mentions Bolton, and Bolton was a prominent.
Bolton is in the conversation. Mm-hmm. But so John.
But I don't think Professor Kagan is in the conversation.
One of the things that's alleged is that Trump is the first independent president of the United States. Do you buy that?
And against both parties.
He ran against both parties, but I don't think anybody who pours concrete for a living is totally independent. I just want to it's an old Chicago thing.
From John Cass.
How you doing, baby?
We'll take more of your calls, 1-800-723-8289. Dan Proftin for Bruce Duman on this edition of Beyond the Beltway.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels. Join me for a new season of Wild Travels, Sundays at 10:30 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications.
Dan Proft sitting in for Bruce Dumont on this edition of Beyond the Beltway, and my panel from left to right, Salim Muakil from WVON, radio talk show host on VON, senior editor at In These Times, University of Chicago professor of international politics, Charles Lipson, and Chicago Tribune Page 2 columnist John Cass. And I want to pose this question. We're talking about Trump's cabinet as it's taking shape. Let me pose this question to this esteemed group. And that is this. Does it signal anything about rank order of priority in terms of issue area that he's focused on the national security portion of his administration first and not leveling up people to be HHS secretary, thinking about Obamacare, Treasury secretary, thinking about economic policy, even as he'll ultimately, of course, get to those posts? Is the priority instructive of anything in terms of the focus of the administration? John?
I think that two main things that he campaigned on, right? Immigration and national security and jobs. So three. He's got to take care of that right away. Put that in place. The renegotiating the trade deals, we'll see how that works out. But I think the first thing he's got to do is set a tone with respect to that.
And Charles, I mean, as part of this also, this is his real weak area. He has no real experience other than building hotels in terms of international diplomacy. And so it's to assuage some of the concerns that people have by putting a qualified, impressive team of foreign policy thinkers around him.
That makes sense to me. I think when you go to HHS and some of these issues, I mean, I think he knew it's interesting. He knew that Sessions would get a very senior appointment, but apparently Sessions was actually interested in the Pentagon, and he didn't want to put him there, apparently. I mean, he wanted him, he wanted a tough guy over at AG, and that's where he put him. I think that on something like HHS, where they're going to be reforming, they have to do something on a health care bill. That's one of the enduring legacies of President Obama, will not be Obamacare, but the fact that there's now a national consensus that people have to have some kind of coverage and that the federal government will play some role. That has to be dovetailed in with the Congress. So my hunch is that Rance Priebus and Paul Ryan will have a big say in sort of picking the finalists and so forth over there, because ultimately it's HHS working together with the House and the White House that will put together a new health care bill, and that's going to be crucial.
And Salim, on these other appointments, Steve Mnuchin, one of his finance chairmen, who's a Goldman Sachs guy, is being rumored for a Treasury secretary, being backed by Carl Icahn, one of Trump's early supporters, billionaire investor Carl Icahn. Do those kind of appointments raise the same concern for you that some of the appointments he's made so far, at least some of the nominations he's made so far, do?
Well, a little bit, but not. I expect him to appoint loyalists. The trouble, of course, is that Trump has no governmental experience. So all of the loyalists that he appoints are loyalists because they flatter him. And that's why a lot of people are concerned about this. What other criteria do they have? He has no connection to them in any other way. So either he's appointing them because they have been flattering toward him, or some other superficial reason. And a lot of people are concerned about his reason.
Do you gentlemen see the Pete Sessions nomination as sort of a skirmish, a dry run for the real fight that's going
to be
the Supreme Court nominee? I mean, kind of an underreported story is that Kellyanne Conway, his campaign manager, said the Supreme Court nominee is going to come from the list of 21 that Trump has promulgated, all of whom, to the extent they're known through their scholarship and their records on courts and so forth, are conservative jurists. And there's jockeying for position, op-eds being written about Diane Sykes from the Seventh Circuit and other judges that are on that list. But is that where the real fight's going to come, the real borking redux is likely to happen?
I would think that that's a good point, Danny. Because we're going to see Jeff Sessions attacked mercilessly by the left.
And it started Friday.
Yeah, as a racist, and ignoring all the other works he did with respect to going after the KKK, desegregation, and so forth. So this is going to be a fight of symbolism. And I think all of us in journalism should keep that in mind as we analyze the next phase of it, because people are going to show their card. It's going to be, we're going to see how they play it, and they're going to be testing on the left, on the Democrats will be testing, how does it work, right? Does it work? Throw some spaghetti on the wall, see if it works, and see how they can build those themes.
And Charles, I mean, for all that's been said about Trump, including by people like me, that this is sort of, you know, kind of a non-ideological, transactional type of guy, he's not coming to the table with this kind of philosophy that he has thought deeply about over the last several decades in terms of governing a nation. But he is a guy who wants what he wants, and it seems to me he's unlikely to yield in the face of whatever the Democrat Senate has to say with respect to his Supreme Court nominee.
He's a populist nationalist, and I think that one of the issues there will be how extreme and strong that populist nationalism actually is. But I think on the Supreme Court, and Jeff Sessions will be a lightning rod. He'll probably get through. He'll be confirmed, but unless there's things that we don't know about that are in his resume. But
by the way, just as a quick aside, on the comity that used to exist in the Senate, and it, to some extent does among some Republicans like Jeff Sessions, Jeff Sessions voted to confirm Eric Holder, Obama's attorney general. Right. So, I mean, you know, it's interesting to see
him.
If the comedy will go both
they
ways.
They will bork him. We're going to find out how many DVDs did he rent about what and everything.
Right.
One of the reasons, of course, is that on both immigration and on race issues, this points to key constituencies that the Democrats, who are now in the minority, want to point to those constituencies and say, we defend your positions, or our positions are your positions on these things, and these are critical elements of the Democratic constituency. They're going to go to the wall on it. On the Supreme Court, there's also the issue of abortion that will come up. So they will, the third element of this Democratic constituency is the discrepancy, the larger women's vote in favor of Democrats over many years. And they think that this issue will also be important there. The Republicans, by contrast, and you saw this when George W. Bush nominated Harriet Myers, his personal attorney, they don't just want the vote. They think they're winning the intellectual arguments, and they want powerful people like Antonin Scalia was to make these intellectual arguments that they think that they're persuading the country on. And I think largely they've been right. That is, that the new ideas have actually come from the Republican side, not at least from the conventional Democratic side.
Let's go to calls. Let's get Jorge in El Paso, who's listening to us on KTSM. On Jorge, you're on Beyond the Beltway.
Oh, okay. Given that Tuesday, the 22nd, it'll be my 55th birthday, and given that in the next 4 years and all that, I think that the selection of Pete Sessions for Attorney General by Donald Trump is going to be the best selection for me, and hopefully for those who sided with Donald Trump in the election, people who pretty much are like myself, who might have some knowledge of some things, but don't have knowledge fully of all things, and that the country will be best served by the decisions that Donald Trump has currently made and will make towards those individuals who will ably serve him in his cabinet, in fact, our cabinet as well.
All right. Thanks for the call, Jorge, and happy 55th birthday in advance. Jeff Sessions, Pete Sessions, the congressman, but Jeff Sessions, go back to Jeff Sessions. He just misspoke on immigration policy. On the things that President Obama did with a pen and a phone that can be undone with a pen. You don't even need the phone. And then Jeff Sessions at Justice, doing what Donald Trump said he was going to do and in priority. So, for example, going after violent felons who shouldn't be in this country and everybody who are not citizens and who everybody says shouldn't be in this country, but for some reason are in this country. And that is
really difficult to defend.
Right, it also undermines the legitimacy of our entire immigration regime, and it makes it impossible to have a conversation about any other component part of immigration.
But you see, in Chicago, for example, when this sanctuary cities business came up, which is sort of like an adjunct, you see Democrats moving farther to the left. People like Rahm Emanuel, mayor of Chicago, moving farther to the left to meet that challenge from the left on this issue.
And Salim, what about Rahm defending sanctuary cities, saying Chicago is going to be a sanctuary city? When he was chief of staff for President Obama, he was the one who's counseling President Obama not to do immigration reform. It's an interesting evolution that Tiny Dancer has undergone.
Tiny Dancer. I think Rahm is embattled. So he's reaching out to the left to try to pull himself together, because much of his challenge is coming from the left. But I want to ask Charles, you actually think that Trump is a populist nationalist? You think he has a formed ideological perspective on that?
I think he ran as that.
Oh, he did.
I don't know what is in his heart.
Well, I think he's largely non-ideological.
But I mean, that could be. Let me say something on the immigration thing. I think that I didn't view it as a left-right exactly. I thought that what Rahm was saying, what Rahm was doing politically, was his challenge is coming from the black community. If he doesn't have the Hispanic community solidly or largely behind him, he's extremely vulnerable. So this was an attempt to solidify a Democratic Hispanic constituency in Chicago in case he doesn't bring blacks along.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, But you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
There can be no stable and enduring peace without the participation of the People's Republic of China and its 750 million people. That is why I have undertaken initiatives in several areas to open the door for more normal relations between our two countries.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Dan Prof, back on this edition of Beyond the Beltway. I'm sitting in for Bruce Dumont. With me, from my right to my left, is Chicago Tribune columnist John Cass, University of Chicago professor Charles Lipson, and in these times, senior editor and WVON, which is a black radio station in Chicago.
The only black-owned radio station.
Black-owned radio station in Chicago, too. That's a good point. Salim Muakil. And Salim, speaking of that, one of the people that Trump met with over the weekend or is scheduled to meet with is the owner of BET.
Mm-hmm.
And this goes maybe back to Trump's argument during the campaign. And in the closing days of the campaign, he's in Charlotte, and he could have talked about anything to any constituency group. And what did he say to African-American families in Charlotte? What have you got to lose? Here are my three prongs: better schools, safer streets, more economic opportunities. Do you think that's why Trump did a little bit better among African-American families than, say, did Mitt Romney 4 years ago?
Yes. He spoke to black people openly, said black rather than minorities. He didn't, cloud the issue. I think that pulled more votes from the black community. It's indicated by some of the callers to my show that they were approving of that position.
Can I ask you a question, Sully? When your listeners hear the words law and order, they must be looking to see whether law and order is going to be law and order for them or against them. What are they listening for and what are they looking for?
Well, some of the code words like stop and frisk, I think that alienated a lot of folks. So when Trump urged that we enact that kind of a program on a national level, I think that was an alienating phrase, so he has to go at it in another way, and I think he's doing that. I'm not convinced, but he is convincing some of my listeners.
Let me ask this question too, and to the group: do you think it's possible, and an unbelievable twist of irony, if this were to come to pass, that Trump could end up doing more to advance racial healing than did the first African-American president of the United States, who leaves office with racial tensions at a 50-year high? If he advanced things like school choice and block-granted Department of Education funds to inner cities so that poor kids could have the same choices that rich people have in terms of the K-12 schooling for their kids, and if they did remove violent predators from inner city neighborhoods that are obviously overwhelmingly law abiding, but you have these recidivist criminals.
I don't know. One of my concerns is federalizing.
I'm talking about devolving, but providing resources that extend opportunity.
I think there is an opportunity, which is why you see not only the left hysterical, and not only the left and the media hysterical. I mean, literally hysterical. You also see the never Trumpers on the right hysterical, or were up until a few days ago, and now they're kind of stunned and what, in a fetal position, rocking back and forth, waiting for their next move. So, yes, I think there's a lot of things he can do.
But is this crazy for me to think that he could be a paradigm shifting candidate with black voters?
I mean, there's some
president,
some black analysts suggest that Trump may even offer reparations. He may go over the line, and I mean, there's been some Republicans who have championed that particular position.
And we could just say forget.
We call them former
away.
Republicans,
right?
Well, Jack Kemp wasn't that averse to it, and Jack Kemp is probably one of the most beloved Republicans in the black community.
Wasn't Kellyanne Conway with him?
I think that the right way to approach this issue is to say,
that Democrats have been part of a coalition that's organized around a grieved identity movement.
Yes.
And if you can begin to move toward an e pluribus unum notion where it's true that you're a Greek Orthodox or Jewish or black or whatever, but we don't think of ourselves primarily as separate groups. We're proud of traditions. We do have different interests, but we're fundamentally all Americans. That would be the right way to try to move forward. If he can do that, as opposed to, and that's the reason people were concerned about, was there white nationalist support here? Why didn't he condemn certain groups and so forth? I think those are legitimate concerns, because my interest is in seeing an end to the divisiveness of identity politics that pits some groups as constant victims and keeps them apart from each other.
But
so how can you have, if you're
right,
if the Charles Lipson dream comes true and we're no longer mired in identity politics, then right. You won't have a Democratic Party. Because that's what they live on.
Well, you don't have a Democrat Party right now. The Democrat Party's been relegated to a coastal party plus Illinois. I mean, isn't that right?
That's why 33 they want to get rid of the Electoral College.
Well, 33 governors, two-thirds of state legislatures, plus yeah. both the House and the Senate, plus the presidency. I mean, isn't that part of Obama's legacy? Is making the Democrat Party a super minority party?
Well, you know, Obama's, if you attribute it to Obama, you would have to include the reaction to Obama. I mean, when he first was elected, there was a white backlash to Obama, and exemplified by the Congress's obstructionism. And you know, one of the reasons
all
why
racism.
I'm not saying that racism is responsible for it, but Obama was a radical change, and many people felt threatened by it and the demographic anxiety that it provoked, because people are talking about the white majority is soon to pass in this country. And I think that created a lot of anxiety. And that's one of the reasons for this heightening of racial animosity.
Salim, if you were advising Donald Trump, and I know that'd be uncomfortable, but if you were, would you tell him, continue doing what you did on the campaign? Go to Detroit. Go to Charlotte. Make the specific appeal that you made in the campaign and then back it up with policy action.
Yes, I would.
That's what he needs to do.
I mean, that's what we can salvage out of this election. Yes, I would urge him to do that.
And you think, from your experience, and as Charles was talking about the callers, you think that people are open-minded to? Jason Riley had a very interesting piece in the Wall Street Journal this week. It took a walk through Harlem and said, you know, people weren't Trump voters, but they're kind of open to the possibility. Is there more openness than people may think?
Well, black Americans are very adjustable. We've had to be very adjustable in our history, and I think that people are adjusting.
Back with more Beyond the Beltway after this.
Well, I can also say that.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sit cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
The beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amling's now at 888-880-TREE.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough,
you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels. Join me for a new season of Wild Travels, Sundays at 10:30 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I never told anybody to lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false, and I need to go back to work for the American people. Thank you.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
I'm Dan Proft, sitting in for Bruce Dumont on this edition of Beyond the Beltway. You can catch me Monday to Friday, 5 a.m. to 9 a.m. Chicago time. Boy, 5 a.m. to 9 p.m. would be a long shift. 5 a.m. to 9 a.m. AM 560, Chicago's Morning Answer, where I co-host a morning drive show with Amy Jacobson. The panel tonight, from my left to my right, Salim Muakil. He is a WVON talk show host, black radio talk show host, black-owned black radio station in Chicago, also the senior editor of In These Times. Charles Lipson is a professor of international politics at the University of Chicago, a realclearpolitics.com contributor, and also has launched a blog, zipdialogue.com. And John Cass is the Page 2 columnist for the Chicago Tribune, Mike Royko's descendant, right? That's fair.
I'm in there four times a week, and I'm also dabbling in podcast form.
Yeah, we're just glad we got him off of page three. It was not an appealing picture.
Right, exactly. You're all multimedia stars. That's the point. during the break, we were talking a little bit, picking up on our conversation about Trump's cabinet and perhaps his most controversial selection so far, Jeff Sessions, the senator from Alabama for attorney general. Talking about what is the fate of Hillary Clinton in the first 100 days of a Trump administration. Will he suggest to his presumed Attorney General Sessions that Hillary Clinton should be prosecuted, that a special prosecutor should be tabbed to look into, to give a fresh look into what she did, both with the emails as well as with the Clinton Foundation? How does that play out? Now, Trump, in his 60 Minutes interview, the first full-form interview he gave after his election, said, they're good people. I don't want to hurt them. But that's not the same thing as saying what his disposition is with respect to her fate. So what should
special prosecutor
Trump do? Why special prosecutor?
Because the take the personalities out of it for a second. The fact is that the American, it's a dangerous, dangerous thing we're looking at. The American people cannot have the belief that there are two levels of justice, one for the rich and the connected, and the other for themselves. I know many groups and many people have had this belief for a long time, but when it's held by the minority, that's bad enough. When it's held by the majority of people who focus group after focus group during this election explained this. You can't have it. It's dangerous and corrosive over the long term. So I would suggest, I would hope, a special prosecutor, a grand jury, whatever you want to do, vet everything with the Clinton Foundation and leveraging her office as Secretary of State with the Clinton Foundation, which to me, I'm not a lawyer, I know that you studied the law,
I got a degree.
You got a degree in it. It looks like a walking RICO.
Take your calls on what you think Hillary Clinton's fate should be, what Donald Trump should do, and what his Justice Department should do vis-a-vis Hillary Clinton. The number, 1-800-723-8289. Charles Lipson, there's the issue of whether Hillary Clinton should be prosecuted, Jim Comey's fate as head of the FBI. Also, the impeachment of the current IRS commissioner and perhaps the prosecution of Mr. Koskinen as well as Lois Lerner for the illegal targeting of individuals and groups based on their political beliefs and religious beliefs that occurred during the Obama years. That is still a pending issue as well.
That's right. I think that the place that independent prosecutors most needed, independent counsel, is for the IRS, because the IRS, it appears to have been weaponized. This simply cannot happen in our country. One of the great public servants in America was the late president of the University of Chicago, Ed Levy, who was appointed by Gerald Ford to come in and clean out the stables, which were filled with the leavings of horses after the Nixon administration. And he came in and he restored integrity there. If it looks like what's happening is not just backward looking, but if it looks like it's payback by this administration for a previous administration, that will not help us move forward. We need to do exactly what John Cass was saying. We need to ensure that the public believes that the laws are fairly applied to all of us as individuals. We're just individuals, but also that they are applied fairly and equally to people within the government.
But if just the Aegean stables at IRS are cleaned out, did I get that? I know it's a Greek thing, I know. Okay, Hercules, okay. I apologize.
Thank you, my son. This is Sparta.
And there's an I Am Spartacus rally going on at Starbucks.
Isn't it, though?
We're going to get to that. Interesting. But if it's only IRS and it's not Hillary Clinton, who part of the reason she lost, 70% of America thought she was untrustworthy, thought she had committed crimes.
Right.
If Jim Comey and Hillary Clinton aren't held to account under the law, or Jim Comey doesn't hold her to account under the law, right, nobody does anything better than he did, then isn't that a problem in terms of instilling the faith you described?
I think it is. I think that there's a very difficult issue. When Nixon, I think, had committed crimes, Ford pardoned him.
Right.
Paid for it.
And I think that if you were I think that the issue of the corruption of the Clinton Foundation, if it can be proved that it was a kind of RICO operation in which she's in power, she's expected to return to office, people are giving money to a private foundation, he's getting $16+ million to be an honorary chancellor of a university.
Well, that's exactly what was going on.
If it walks like a duck, it floats. I mean, and then you burn
well,
it.
This is quacking more than Aflac's duck.
But you're saying special prosecutor and potential criminal charges or not?
I just don't know. I really do feel mixed about it, because I do feel like we do need a thorough investigation. On the other hand, I want the new administration to move forward. I want it to reestablish the law, and I don't want people to feel like we're somehow going after the losers.
Salim,
banana republic type of way. I mean, that's what it reeks of.
The use of the IRS against your enemies?
IRS case is a different case, altogether. But I think the Hillary prosecution would be too. It would echo some of the worst behavior of these regimes.
But George W. Bush didn't go after John Kerry because he hadn't committed any crimes. The issue is that you have a vanquished nominee who, there's a lot of evidence to suggest she violated the law. Isn't that important?
There was a very serious investigation of those charges, yes. and they came to the conclusion that they weren't worthy of.
I would agree with half of what you two guys are saying at this point. Trump exacerbated everything by calling for the lock him up.
That's right.
Lock him up. And he poisoned the well, and it's just almost as bad as what she and Democrats are.
Okay, we're going to pick this conversation up after the break. Also, take your calls. The number again is 1-800-723-8289. Dan Proft in for Bruce Duman on this edition of Beyond the Beltway.
Historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
Thank you all very much. Admiral Kelly, Captain Card, officers and sailors of the USS Abraham Lincoln, my fellow Americans, major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
Dan Proft in for Bruce Dumont on this edition of Beyond the Beltway. Thank you for joining us. Distinguished panel, John Cass, Chicago Tribune, Charles Lipson, University of Chicago, Salim Uakil, radio talk show host at WVON Radio in Chicago. We're talking about what Trump and what his Department of Justice should do about Hillary Clinton, essentially reopen the case or allow the investigative committees in Congress to continue to do their work and see where it leads, appoint a special prosecutor, let it go entirely. We've got a full board of calls we'll get to in just a moment. But let me ask a question and then propose some kind of middle way. Salim, I wanted to get your take on this, because one of the arguments that many in the African-American community make, and it's a legitimate one, is, you know, we get treated very differently vis-a-vis the law than somebody who's rich or powerful and white. And isn't Hillary Clinton's treatment, potentially in this case, an example of just that complaint?
There is quite a bit of agreement in the black community with that perspective, no doubt. But as John Cass pointed out earlier, I think that the well has been poisoned by Trump's aggressive, demonization of Hillary, and the fact that his crowd, would often get into this chant of "lock her up, lock her up." I think that was very alienating to people who are a little bit sensitive to the comparison of the U.S.
It politicized the issue.
It did politicize the issue, but even so, the wise thing to do outside of the politics of it is to do what you talked about, what Charlie talked about, with putting someone in there like a Levy, somebody in there to really do the job and look at it. Because the IRS... IRS investigation has not really yielded anything that should be. If we don't trust the Department of Justice and the Attorney General who met on the plane with Bill Clinton, and if we don't trust the IRS, I've made mention in my column many times about the United States 2016 and Versailles. Well, guess what? That's the kind of thinking that gets you into trouble.
Well, John, let me propose this to the group, a middle way. Because of the concern about politicization, and it looks like a banana republic if Hillary Clinton goes to jail or is prosecuted criminally, what about a civil RICO prosecution? Because one thing it seems to me there's close to unanimity is she sold our government for personal gain. That's what the Hillbilly House of Cards did. Clinton Inc., Bill and Hillary, and obviously, the Clinton Foundation. That's the corrupt organization. A civil RICO case essentially shuts down the Clinton Foundation without the threat that Hillary or Bill or anybody else goes to jail. What about that as a middle way?
What is it, like a civil, what, and then fines?
Well, I mean,
you have to give up your $100 million or $200 million in speeches and end up on the bridge selling matches like the poor little match you told everyone.
That's a little bit melodramatic, but yeah, effectively, yes.
I'm looking forward to the cartoon movie.
What about that, A Middle Way?
I do think that there are a number of options that are available here, but I'll tell you. The sense that the Justice Department itself has been corrupted is a serious problem. We know that there was not only a lot of pushback against any of these investigations, they never allowed a grand jury to be convened.
Cheryl Mills
they
deals.
Moved all of the – consolidated all of the FBI national investigations into the old office that that Loretta Lynch used to run in New York. So she still has. So there are a lot of problems. And I think that the first job of one of the first jobs, I mean, really, the job of the attorney general is the main job he's going to have under Trump is dealing with the new immigration issue and appointing a whole series of judges. But I think that there has to be a reestablishment of some sense that there is equal blind justice in this country without regard to race and without regard to political stature.
Let's get some callers in on this conversation. How about Ferris in Myrtle Beach listening to us on WRNN? Hi, Ferris. Ferris? Do we have Ferris?
He's wheeled off.
All right. Can we get Gene in South Bend listening to us on WMNC? Gene, you're on Beyond the Beltway.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. There is no doubt that the Clintons have to be investigated or reopened on this. It's not just for our country. But the reputation of our country has really lost a lot of credibility around the world. And if we do not set any precedents and lead by example, and not just for the Clintons, but for any other politicians, because there's a lot of politicians that have gotten away with stuff. We know that. The whole D.C. thing is all corrupt.
All right.
And it needs to be cleaned out. But I feel really bad for the Democrat voters in a way, because moderates of both sides, I tell people, is what made this country, because that's who the majority is. And they got the shaft by basically the party saying we're gonna back her up even long before she announced that she was gonna run. And that is not a free election. Look what we had 17 people. I mean, you couldn't get any more candidates on that stage than what we had. But then the candidates that they allowed to pick and said, hey, we'll support you a little bit, they all had flaw issues, and that's why they were picked or allowed to be picked to run. But we've got to, if we don't enforce laws, especially to the highest power, we're always going to have corruption. And then they can go back and say, well, they got away with it, and that's what Congress is doing right now. They're pointing out everybody else that's done stuff. Instead, let's fix the problem and fix the criminal mind of this stuff, because it goes a lot deeper than what we see just with the Clinton Foundation.
Gene, thank you. I thanks for the call. I appreciate it. There's no question the land of moral relativism begets more corruption. There needs to be a standard, and then everybody has to abide that standard. That's not the case now. Let's get another caller in. Eve in Toledo, Ohio, listening to us on XM. Eve, you're on Beyond the Beltway.
Yes, hi. I just had a question. They could always bring it civilly, but once she is found not guilty in a court, don't they have to find new evidence to bring that back to court? They can't just retry her for the same crime again.
Well, that's true, but she has not been tried for anything yet.
She hasn't been charged with anything. Right.
They haven't convened a grand jury, and I think that that's actually one of the most important issues. They haven't convened a grand jury, which has not allowed a lot of these warrants and other kinds of evidence.
It's really questionable behavior. But another thing I'd like to ask all three of you, you go down this road, what you're doing is wiping out the whatever remains of the legacy of Barack Obama, because he allowed this to happen after running. Remember, I will transcend the broken politics of the past. Remember that?
Okay, so
now what?
So
it's like a Chicago
really?
Deal.
So if President Obama chooses not to pardon her, should Donald Trump pardon her to be done with this?
And
in the hope of not jeopardizing
his extremely damaging to him politically.
Yeah,
but I mean, to your point earlier, Charles, it's his 100-day agenda and all these policy matters. Or is there a way to balance pursuing Hillary Clinton and
Look,
justice
here,
for Hillary Clinton with the 100-day agenda?
Here's the problem. He ran as somebody who was going to get rid of the insider deals. As if he's seen at the very outset as cutting an insider deal, I think he's just shooting himself in the knee.
All right, let's go another caller, Alan in Austin, Texas, listening to us on KLBJ. Alan, you're on Beyond the Beltway.
Thanks, guys. Enjoying your program. I think you're underestimating Donald Trump. You know, when he says drain the swamp, he is serious. He's talking about going after Hillary. And I think even if Obama pardons Hillary, it's a questionable whether that's legal or not. How can you pardon somebody before they've been indicted?
Yeah, you can actually.
I thought you could.
The president can.
That's
what Ford did for Nixon.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. I don't know whether he can pardon the Clinton Foundation, though.
No.
By the way, LBJ, the station that this was called, you know, Lyndon Johnson went into public service as a poor man, and he came out in control of all the media assets in the center of Texas.
Yeah, I understand. This is
just
not
works
the idea of a public official enriching themselves while
exactly.
in public office.
And
it's not new. The Clintons did take it to a new level.
But many people say that the Clinton Foundation exemplifies their notion of a private-public partnership, and that
sure, if I were the king of Morocco, I would say yes, exactly.
The last name is Clinton. Those are the people who say that.
I mean, the Clinton Foundation has done a lot of good work in the world.
Salim, I think we can engage in a private-public partnership. On the road paving issue.
Salim, should President Obama pardon Hillary? Should President Clinton, President Obama pardon Hillary so as to preclude? Preclude a prosecution.
It might be necessary if Trump indicates that he's very serious about this. I just don't think he's going to pursue a prosecution of Hillary Clinton. I think
what if Jeff Sessions wants to?
Well, he may. He
it
may,
would put them on
something.
The defensive, though, wouldn't it? It would put certain Democratic constituencies on the defensive and allow others to move forward with their own attacks because they want to get rid of
him. You could pardon them in request if they gave you a statement.
All right, we'll pick this discussion up and also talk about the left's reaction still to the Trump election as well as to Trump cabinet selections. Beyond the Beltway, more after this.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels. Join me for a new season of Wild Travels, Sundays at 10:30 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications.
Thanks for joining us on this edition of Beyond the Beltway. I'm Dan Proft, in for Bruce Dumont this evening, and we've got a very talented panel, including from my right, John Cash, Chicago Tribune, page two columnist.
On your right.
Charles Lipson, University of Chicago, international politics professor, RealClearPolitics.com contributor, as well as a blogger at ZipDialogue.com. And Salim Uakil, who is a WVON radio talk show host in Chicago, as well as senior editor for In These Times, that publication. And we're talking about the potential of a Hillary Clinton prosecution, what Trump should do upon taking office with ostensibly Jeff Sessions as his attorney general, special prosecutor. Should he let it go? Civil RICO action, some way to shut down the Clinton Foundation without sending them to jail. But I want to move on from that a little bit and talk about Trump's first 100 days, the proverbial first 100 days, and with what he can do vis-a-vis executive order combined with what he wants to do in all of these policy areas. Do you expect this to be taking advantage of a Republican-controlled Congress and moving with all due speed to, frankly, erase President Obama's policy legacy?
Yeah, I think that's what they're going to be doing. They're going to be interested in doing. And I think there will be a lot of frantic activity in the first 100 days because Trump has a big group behind him who want to see change, and he's there to usher it in.
Charles. I think that the Obama presidency is going to be the Cheshire Cat smile. I think that it's just going to fade. What they're going to do is start rolling back almost immediately a lot of the things that are simply executive orders. I think the bigger question is to take a very serious look at the regulations that they think are strangling growth. And if they can get rid of those, many of those regulations are particularly hard on small businesses because large businesses can deal with them. They have an army of lawyers, but if you're just
accountants.
I was talking to somebody who's on the board of a small bank, and they were just saying it's just impossible.
Well, see, and so this is going to be some real tests out of the gate for Trump and this administration.
Right.
What are you going to do about Dodd-Frank? Are you going to essentially roll that back? Are you going to eliminate, not reduce, not kind of tinker with, but eliminate the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which, by the way, just was installed a handful of years ago and already has 1,400 employees? I mean, that's how quickly the federal government moves in terms of, you know, encasing itself and the administrative state.
Most positive sign you could see would be high unemployment in Washington, D.C. suburbs.
Yes.
If
Maryland.
Maryland and Virginia. In Northern Virginia. This is an area that has just grown like Topsy for 30, 40 years. Every one of these programs. And what has happened is that as the governments become more involved in your life, they'll pass a law, and the law will say something like, we want all school children to have a good meal. And then, no, but of course, they're not going to tell you what a good meal is. So then they have, 1,000 pages of regulations about calories and where it's got to come from and levels
and
of purity.
And 42 different programs that provide the meals.
And I think the way that you can get rid of a lot of that fairly quickly is to block grant a lot of that stuff back to the states. I think it'll be much more desirable, both because I think many, many Americans think that one of the most fundamental problems that we have is that we're being governed by unanswerable mid-level bureaucrats who, when they screw up, nothing happens
but
to them. And the VA is the prime example.
So, yeah,
it's not just a perception.
John.
It's the fact.
Oh, yeah.
They are the main estate of this. No matter who we have as the president or in the Senate or in the House, the federal bureaucracy runs as its own
Lois Lerner governs us.
So part of it isn't part of it then, and again, trying to assess what we're going to get with Donald Trump.
Yes, of course.
To the concerns that never Trumpers have. We've talked about the left a little bit. Let's talk about the never Trumpers and conservative.
They're looking for a way in now.
Philosophically conservative.
Right.
I mean, to guard against the accusations of authoritarian impulses.
Correct.
Isn't a real test for Donald Trump to see whether he will decentralize power, govern as a federalist, and move power away from D.C. and back to states and localities?
Yes, as opposed to being another, politician with the federal hammer in his hand, just like Hillary would have been, you know, raining it down on the rest of us. Yes, I would like him to do that. But here's the problem with that. He's not really explained that. He's not offered any of that, right? He's spoken vaguely, as Salim has said, but he hasn't actually been specific.
And well, I mean, let's be fair and throw this out to you.
My gosh, what a thought.
Well, in this era where the New York Times is going to do honest reporting, I figure I should try to be fair.
Be at least as fair as them.
Exactly. No, but there was that period about a couple of weeks after the convention and before the Billy Bush tape was released.
Where he was making policy statements.
Right. Well, he was making policy speeches that framed the discussion of each week of the campaign for about 5 weeks that were very detailed. Obviously, they were written by his advisors, but that's okay. That's why you have talented advisors. This is a big job. Right. And they did lay out a path on everything from rebuilding the military in terms of readiness to matters like Obamacare, didn't they?
I think that's right. I think that the managerial skills of the president-elect could be very important here. But I think what conservatives are really looking for is some rolling back, not just of the centralization of all policy in Washington, but some of the permanent bureaucracies that are there. I think that when conservatives look back on the Reagan years, what they think is that in the end, although we rebuilt, there's a huge numbers of triumphs, but the bureaucracies were all left in place. The one area where they really removed a number of bureaucracies was with the tax scale. When you say we're going to move things down, let's say, to three basic tranches of taxes, then there's not a lot of room in that initial rewrite for all the carve-outs, for you get a carve-out for gray jackets and I get a carve-out for blue jackets.
Right.
You just want something that looks a lot less bureaucratic. And I think we're paying a very huge price for highly centralized, highly bureaucratized government. And I think that's where he's got to move.
And Salim, isn't this something that even the left could get – could be supportive of in a sense, because I would assume Democrat governors and Democrat mayors of big cities would want more sovereignty over their government, and the constituents of big city mayors would want more access to the locus of power than they have when it's the federal government picking up all of these tasks. Is that fair?
Well, there is some affection for decentralization, no doubt about it, on the left. And I think that also on the left, there's a lot of support for Trump because they think he's heightening the contradictions in a leftist sense. There are many black nationalists who also are happy that Trump got in because this, they say, will force African Americans to finally begin to become more autonomous and to become and start doing for self more aggressively. And so there is a variety of opinions on the left regarding the Trump ascension.
So are we over the wailing period, or are we getting close to over that? Because there are some columnists coming to grips with it. Nicholas Kristof in the New York Times had a 12-step program, and here's some things I'm going to do. I'm going to accept the election results, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that.
He wrote under the name Nicholas K, I believe. He just said, "I'm Nicholas K, and here's a 12-step program."
Hi, Nicholas. Right? Yeah. No, but then Toni Morrison writes in the New York today about white men being all members of the Klan, essentially.
That is an issue that we haven't discussed. Trump draws a lot of support from white supremacists, from the KKK and those groups. And I mean, we can't simply ignore that.
Well,
right?
But do you want to play? What does that mean, though? What does that mean exactly?
It means that a lot of people feel empowered. A lot of white men feel empowered, and they feel that they can. They're getting their country back. There was that element in much of his appeal from the beginning. This notion that we can
kind of like it's our turn.
An atavistic notion about what this country really represents. We're going back to a time when white hegemony was uncontested.
That's an argument. That's an argument from the left. But I guess my question is the evidence to support it. I mean, does a politician or any person have to be held accountable? Should they be held accountable for everything that everybody says about them that's complimentary
or derogatory?
But I think
we should examine why they appeal to these people so much. What is it about them that is this kind of appeal?
I think what you can hold Trump accountable for is that he did not denounce some of those supporters quite early and clearly. I do think, though, that the idea that
he got 45% of college-educated women, which was supposed to be Hillary right. Clinton's firewall. Mm-hmm. I mean, all of this, everybody who voted for Trump is a misogynist, is a racist.
But that's part of the
I didn't say that.
I know you're not saying that, but some on the left really are. There's op-eds in today's Tribune like that.
Well, there's another.
And it just feeds the revolt.
On my block, there would never be a Trump. You couldn't have a Trump sign. There were Hillary and Tim Kaine signs. Those have not been taken down. And you can ask yourself, well, why is that? And what does it mean, not my president? When lots of people are out there saying not my president.
We're going to pick up that discussion right after this break. Dan Proft in for Bruce Dumont on Beyond the Beltway.
Of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
There can be no stable and enduring peace without the participation of the People's Republic of China and its 750 million people. That is why I have undertaken initiatives in several areas to open the door for more normal relations between our two countries.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Dan Proft back on this edition of Beyond the Beltway, sitting in for Bruce Dumont this evening. And before the break, we were talking about the reaction to the left and kind of the coping that's going on, the going through the Kubler-Ross stages of grief, but also in terms of what the left is going to do. Are they going to double down and go hard left with like Keith Ellison as the DNC chairman? Or is there some reflective period that people like John Stewart offered this week where he said, you know, to characterize all Trump voters as these troglodytes is unfair, it's hypocrisy of the left, and we need to think about why we're not generating support from, say, white, middle, and lower income families. There seems to be a real tension based on the op-eds I've been reading and the interviews I've been watching in terms of which way the Democrats and the left base of the Democrat Party is going to go. Salim, where do you think it goes?
Well, I think there's a lot of opinion that supports what you're saying about the left is beginning to grapple with the fact that Trump pulled a lot of the constituents that the left generally targets, and the same people that Bernie Sanders target. And so there is some discussion about how the left can better mobilize itself to attract these folks. But then there are others who say, you know, they compare this to Germany and that unnamed dictator. Goodwin's law is often
needs suspended. To be invoked. Yes,
yeah, but it's
right.
often suspended, and they use the analogy of the Germans who didn't protest vigorously enough to stop the rise
but
it,
but
of this
it,
guy.
But
the left's about.
But isn't that
the left
that's the oldest trope?
Right.
They said the same thing about Reagan.
Just step over, step over that. Don't let it get on your shoes. But the idea here is that the left is pushing fear. They're living on it, and they're expressing it to get everyone afraid.
But, John, isn't it?
In order to delegitimize this government.
There's a reason for fear, though.
Oh, please.
Well, wait a second. The real question, it seems to me, is will the left continue to do what brought it to power with President Obama specifically, which is the entire rationale is bigot baiting, as Rusty Reno calls it.
That's the problem.
It's solidarity and marginality, even if that marginality is not actual.
It won't pick up votes in the Midwest in the next midterm. That's the issue, right? There's a midterm election coming. You've mentioned, both of you, all of you, the Democrats are about to choose a chairman who is so far to the left, who is wedded to identity politics. How is that going?
Keith Ellison?
Yes. How is that?
Not far to the left, man. He inclines to the left.
If the Republicans could vote for head of the Democratic National Committee, Keith Ellison would win in a landslide. I think that you're going to see another of these battles in the vote for the head of the minority party in the House of Representatives.
Yeah, but is Nancy Pelosi, is that a real challenge? Because more substantial challengers took a pass for this Tim Ryan guy out of Ohio.
That could be true, but
he makes a good point.
But it's an issue where if you're a sort of standard left liberal with real connections to serious money, is that what the Democratic Party wants to be? One thing about it, we talk about it like it's a monolith, but in fact what's happened over the Obama years is that there have been no coattails, and in fact reverse coattails. There have been just a decimation of the party. So you have to ask yourself who's left in it and who's left is the left.
Well, and Salim, when you said Tim Ryan makes a good point of it, this is the congressman challenging Nancy Pelosi, he makes a good case. What do you mean?
Well, he says, you know, the Democrats have not produced in many elections. If you have a bad team, you look to the quarterback, you look to the pitcher, you look to the pivotal player. And if Nancy Pelosi is that pivotal player, then perhaps we should think about changing her.
But what have they done in the Senate? Chuck Schumer gets elevated, so it's another is the minority leader in the Senate. And if Nancy Pelosi survives, then the response that the Democrats are projecting to all those Bernie, feel the burners out there is, we didn't hear anything. Nothing's changed. Same old, same old.
I think the odd thing that's happening in these elections is seeing the people fleeing Illinois, New Jersey, New York, Connecticut, California, Massachusetts, moving to North Carolina and shifting it to Democratic.
Well,
they're fleeing these states after with failed policies.
After the totally. Party's rev, after they've savaged the tax base. They savage another.
They're like locusts.
They're eating their young and just moving along.
We should not demonize the coastal areas of this country. These are the truly
elites.
No, not just elites, but they are cosmopolitan. I mean, this is the future of the world where we have various groups of.
I think it's why the Republicans want the water to rise and to take these people under.
But Salim, what about big cities? I mean, the cities, the largest city where a Republican is mayor is San Diego, and cities like Chicago have been Democrat rule for 100 years. How's it going for African Americans, Latinos? I wouldn't say great.
No, that's true. I mean, but again, you have to ask yourself what would have happened had there been Republican leadership.
Is it possible it could be worse?
Yes.
I don't know what worse looks like.
You know the old story about stocks when people say, how low can it go? And the answer is zero.
African Americans aren't doing, we're not living in the ditch, in squalor. I mean, there are many people who are doing well country.
But they're leaving. Here's the problem. Those African Americans who are doing well are leaving. They're leaving the city of Chicago, leaving big cities to get out.
Many are.
Detroit.
And of all different political stripes,
within
right?
The city, though.
There are always economic incentives. I mean, that's why black people are
but
here.
It's also
in the first
fear
place.
Of crime.
But what's the talk about schools?
in the city. I think that the link between the Democrats and the teachers' unions is one of the basic elements of the party. I think something's got
to
be done.
That's going to have to be the last word. My thanks to John Cass, Charles Lipson, Salim Muakil for coming in this Sunday. Beyond the Beltway is a Jenna B. production. I'd also like to thank Colin Bobbitt, Fritz Goldman, and Dan Dorfman for their assistance in getting this program on the air. I'm Dan Proff, substituting for Bruce Dumont. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a good evening.
A good job.
Thank you very much.
Yay!
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
The beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels.
Join me for a new season of Wild Travels, Sundays at 10:30 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman. Miss Lewinsky, I never told anybody to lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false, and I need to go back to work for the American people. Thank you.
Experience more history at museum.tv.